Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Ruben Ayala. He's the founder and CEO of Triple Nickel, a lifestyle brand that celebrates diversity in their apparel and designs. And Ruben also served as an officer in the Green Berets for 13 years. He brings a wealth of experience in leadership and teamwork to all of his entrepreneurial endeavors. And so we're going to dive into Ruben's journey as a veteran, his transition to entrepreneurship, and his work with Triple Nickel. So welcome to the show, Ruben. I'm glad to have you here.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, Scott. I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. For the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you and your story, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's not much to cover, so it'll be brief. So for those who don't know who I am, Ruben Ayala. I got a weird name because I'm Puerto Rican. That's where I was born and raised. I did partial raising here in Texas in San Antonio. My mother and I moved to the United States early in the 80s, and did a lot of my formidable years here in Texas. From Texas, I joined the Army. Spent a lot of time doing a lot of different jobs, so I got a lot of empathy for all of the mechanisms that make the military grow. Yeah, I finished up my career as a special forces officer, but I also spent time as an admin clerk, as a legal specialist, when I was enlisted as an officer, I was also in the infantry. So I got a pretty good background on, all the jobs, in the service support side, combat arms side. And then when I finished my time in the military, I went the entrepreneurial route and here I am.
Yeah. And I like how you have the well-rounded background with a bunch of different jobs in the military. So it's not just one job that you did your whole time in the military and that's all you knew. You knew a lot of things. You knew the admin side, you knew the infantry side, you knew, even enlisted versus officer. You get a really well-rounded experience there. And it's, I think, rare to find somebody with such a diverse background in their military history. Either they get in at one MOS and they just stick with that all the way through, or maybe they have a change somewhere throughout, but maybe it's not that huge of a change. It's maybe a similar field that they're getting into. On occasion, yeah, you get the enlisted going to the officer side, but yeah, you get a nice, well-rounded background. And so I think, of any of the guests that I've had on here, someone who can speak to the military experience and things like that, I think you're probably the guy to talk to because you have such a wide range of of everything that you've dealt with. And so, people that, maybe were in the infantry, they can talk to you and relate to you. That people who were more in the admin roles, they can talk to you and relate to you. And, there's a lot of diversity there in your background there. So I like what you had there. And so I appreciate your experience. I'm looking forward to getting into this this interview and talking a little bit more about what it is that you do with Triple Nickel and the other things that you have going on. But I think this episode in particular will be a good one just because of that background that I was talking about. So Ruben, can you tell us a little bit more about your experience in the Army? You talked a little bit about your background. Before the break, we had quite a diverse background that you talked about. You had all sorts of different jobs in the military, enlisted, officer. But specifically, how did your experience serving in the special forces shape your perspective on things like leadership and teamwork? And how did you develop as a leader as you're going through all of that?
Yeah, all good questions. I like to joke with people when I talk about my background. Even though I'm Puerto Rican, I'm part Jamaican. This is a joke that, Jamaicans, are such hard workers, and, I had so many different jobs. And my journey in the military is a testament to my constantly figuring out what it is that I want to do when I grow up. You know, I didn't have a plan graduating high school. I just joined the Army because, you know, my friends were going to college or doing something significant. I was not. I didn't have good grades. So I found my way into becoming a legal specialist, working with a bunch of lawyers. The lawyers kind of took me under their wing and said, hey, man, you are a knucklehead, but I think you have some potential. He thought about being an officer. So those conversations led me to becoming an officer. You know, I didn't have anybody in my family who was that. You know, I going through ROTC, you saw the guys who were in the infantry, Rangers. They're like, yeah, this is what you need to do, Ruben. This is where it's at. I said, okay, I guess I can try that. I fell into that. And one thing I failed to mention, I spent a short stint as a communications officer. I was in a signal branch after I did my branch detail. And it was really there when I went into the signal branch that I really, really knew I had to get out of the signal branch because I hated it. And that's how I ended up in Special Forces. So my trek into the dark side, as we like to say, was not one because I planned it that way, because I always wanted to be a Green Beret. It was out of circumstance. You know, I started out my career as an officer in Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty in the 82nd. I would always see the SF guys or see the guys behind the fence in Delta. And, you know, for me, those were things that were not available to me. I didn't see a lot of people that looked like me there. And it was just something that was just unattainable. But once I switched branches up and got into a signal branch, I knew that that wasn't me. And to make the military a career, I wanted to do something that I knew I would like. So I just challenged myself to do it and I made it. And it took a village, you know, to take a guy like me who didn't come from that cloth. And I had a lot of good NCOs that helped me to get to the point where I was able to do my job efficiently.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't sit here and tell you like, man, I was destined to become this like great leader. Cause that would be fake. You know, I tripped my way into Special Forces.
Sure.
and I was able to do the job well because I had good NCOs.
Yeah. And that's fair enough, because I think a lot of us get into the military not really knowing what we're getting ourselves into. You know, some people may be lucky and they have, you know, family history where people have been in the military and they're able to say, hey, this, you're signing up for this. This is what you're going to do. You now you're going into it. You know what you're going to expect. But, you know, someone who doesn't necessarily know all of that. Yeah. You kind of have to rely on, you know, the good NCOs. You need to rely on that leadership to help guide you along the path, because I think with anything in life, those people, they've been there, they've done it. They've probably made some mistakes along the way. And as a good leader, you don't want to see those other people who are coming up under you to make those same mistakes. It's kind of, to me, it would just like make me cringe if I'm seeing this guy coming up and it's like, yeah, I remember doing that too. And it's like, yeah, I probably should have said something to that guy. Like, so he didn't make that mistake too, right? But that's, you know, I think a great way to look at things is looking up to that leadership. And even after we get out of the military, there are other people who have been out much longer than we've been out, and they have gone through a lot of the struggles of transitioning, getting out of the military, the family issues, careers, education, other issues that you just go through, regular life issues that they may be going through. They've been through those things already. And so why not look at those people, some of the older, maybe Vietnam era veterans or even older than that. Look at some of those people and look to them for advice and wisdom and guidance if they can offer it. You know, look to those people. And you know, I like to encourage people to reach out to some of the older veterans because they have that wisdom and advice that they can impart on you and help you out along the way. They've already made the mistakes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So after leaving the military, you transitioned into entrepreneurship. We talked about that a little bit earlier, but how did your military background influence your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, good question. So in Special Forces, you know, we, Special Forces, I like to say is a great pathway to entrepreneurship, because the way that the branch is arrayed, where the rubber meets the road is the A-team. So, you know, you remember growing up in the '80s, you had the A-team. So the A-team, you have 12 individuals, and on the NCO side of the house, you have two of each primary MOS. So you can do split team ops. And when we deploy, we go to these austere environments and we're entrusted with so much responsibility. And it's sometimes a lot of money. You're almost like a small business setting up shop with, you know, books that you have to keep, logistics that you have to maintain. Sometimes you have to run a small town or a small city, because you're running your own base camp. So you are developing a lot of skills that are equatable to business. So coming out, I knew I wanted to do something on my own because I have a very creative mindset. So what I did, I went back to school because I never ran a business before. So I knew I needed some help to take those skills and those desires I had, but translate them to real world stuff. So I applied to the University of Texas executive MBA program, got accepted, which is a 2-year cohort. And I utilized that time to reset, to just do a reset on Ruben. Like, I need to be able to talk to people that are not in the military. I need to understand the way the corporate mindset works and just kind of meld back into society. So that's what I did for the first 2 years that I got out, and developed my business plan to start my first company. And that was a vending company. So I created a healthy vending company, which ended up being a really successful vending company over the past few years. So that was the first thing I did when I got out. So absolutely, being in SF set me up for success. It gave me that confidence. Plus, it's a cool job, you know? So when people talk to you about your job, it's like, oh man, you're a Green Beret, man. That's badass. Yeah, it is badass. You know, sometimes now, you know, being so far removed from it, you know, almost 10 years, I think about it like, damn, man, that was fierce. I can't believe I did all that, but you know, it's cool. And you know, I had very fond memories. I'm glad I did it. But it definitely has helped me out, man.
Yeah. And the way you put it too is interesting that, you know, running a base, it's almost like running a small city or a small town, where that you have all the logistics. You have to get food onto the base. You have to get, you know, supplies, you know, ammunition and medical, and there's all sorts of different things that go into it. Even mail, you know, when you're downrange, mail gets delivered. You have to get all that stuff sorted and figured out. There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it really is similar to running a business, where you have to figure out, you know, inventory levels. Like, you know, are we.
Dude, I'll give you a quick vignette, right? So my first time deployed as a 18 commander, in Special Forces, we went to Afghanistan, and the primary mission set for Special Forces is UW's unconventional warfare. And we went to Afghanistan early enough to where there were certain bases that were still being run by Special Forces teams. So it's an inherent mission that Special Forces does. And we went to our own base camp. We had to pay our soldiers. So literally we would have a line every month, and we'd have to dish out payroll. We had all of the facilities there we had to take care of. We had civilian contractors that essentially worked for us and reported to us. So generators went down, we were responsible for all that. We had a mess facility we were responsible for. We had three OPs on the border of Pakistan we were responsible for. They got attacked. If something got damaged, we had to fix that. We had tractors. We had vehicles. We had soldiers from 18th Airborne Corps assigned to us with artillery, all kinds of stuff. So on our base, we had, you know, I'm responsible automatically for about 600 people. Wow. And we have landing zones. We have resupplies that are coming in through parachute or, you know, through jingle trucks, whatever the case may be. And, you know, people need to eat. They need to stay. We need to control that. And this is a 12-man team. And oh, by the way, we still have our primary mission of conducting direct action, conducting, you know, foreign internal defense. Sometimes we got to do UW. So at night, we're doing our job. In the daytime, we're running a city. And it's extremely difficult, man. And you're doing that, you know, day in and day out, and it's exhausting. But again, those stories and those experiences, those are the types of things that give me the confidence to be able to come out here daily and just crush it in the civilian side.
That's great. And it's great experience. Ruben, a lot of people I've spoken to have had a difficult time with their transition out of the military. Either they didn't plan well enough or had a plan that they thought was great and it fell apart after getting out of the military. What was your transition like getting out of the military? Did you have a plan? I know getting into the military, you said there wasn't much of a plan, but getting out, did you have a plan, or did you see entrepreneurship as something that was in your future? And did you have any challenges or setbacks along the way?
Yeah, I would say yes to all the above. You know, those I had a plan. You know, it was, you know, man, I forgot who said it. You know, if you want to see God laugh, you know, come up with a plan, something like that. I don't know, man. But yeah, I had a plan, but my plan got derailed like 20 times. But the long story short to my plan, where it all began, I think I was coming back from Iraq on R&R, and I was walking through the airport, and I stopped to get a magazine because I had a long flight to Kuwait, I think it was, or Saudi, I don't remember. But I picked up an Entrepreneur magazine, and I saw the magazine had like the top five fattest cities in America. So I saw it. San Antonio was like number two at the time. And I know that that's where I wanted to retire. So, and then I also picked up a muscle and fitness magazine or something like that. And in it, there was a company in California that was doing healthy vending. So I read it and I said, oh man, that would be a really cool idea if I can do something like that in San Antonio, because it's like top five fattest cities. I think it could correlate. And you know, at that point, the deployments during that period from 2001 to 2012, 13, 14 were just crazy. And I'm just tired. So I wanted like a cool job. I envisioned me being this guy that people see me on the street, he's a nobody. I just want the most boring job. So vending sounded like a very boring job.
Right.
But that was the seed that was planted, and that was on my way back to Iraq. So fast forward, going through the MBA program, developing that plan, putting it together, I purchased five vending machines. And the first 12 months, those five vending machines sat in a garage, man, because I couldn't put them anywhere.
Wow.
So, and it was just hard, you know, it was a hard sell, man. I'm in the city where people love Big Red and barbacoa. So like, why would I want a healthy vending service? So, you know, my initial foray into entrepreneurship was a bust. I couldn't sell the concept, but once it took hold, I was able to just continue to push it. And it's those experiences that we talked about before. setbacks, you know, in the military, all of those experiences of, you know, being deployed and facing hardship, you know, I was able to draw back on that. Transitioning as a whole was extremely difficult for me. I think the first 4 to 5 years were really hard, you know, finding people that you can really relate to. I empathize with people. When you come from a tribe, it doesn't matter if you're in the infantry, it doesn't matter if you're admin, the military is a tribe, you know? And I think when you develop that common core language and that set of experiences with friends, it's hard to find that in the civilian sector, that sense of urgency, sense of responsibility. And that was extremely difficult for me. And I started to, and doing that in entrepreneurship is really tough. So I see that a lot with veteran entrepreneurs. Things don't happen as you plan it in your head. And it's lonely at the top. When I say top, it's not like you're making $1 million. It's just top because you are the boss, even if you don't have employees. Right. So it was extremely difficult for me until I got to the point where I was able to hire people. And the first people I hired were my buddies, the veterans, the guys in my SF community. So the first set of hires were two retired 18 Zulus, which for people who don't know what 18 Zulu is a retired E8. So I had two E8 Special Forces guys work for me. We like to say we were like the deadliest vending company in the United States. So we're, you know, replenishing vending machines all through San Antonio, you know, with a bunch of like barrel chested killers and stocking Snickers. It was pretty cool. But yeah, man, as a whole, it took about 4 to 5 years to get grounded, man. It's a tough endeavor.
And I'm glad you said that it took time. It's not like an overnight success story where it's like you had this idea today, you started implementing it tomorrow, and then by the next day, boom, you're rolling in it because everything's just on track to be successful. You stumble along the way. You make mistakes. You learn things along the way. I think that's the most important thing. And you grow from that.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is probably what helped you get into what you're doing now with Triple Nickel and everything like that. So could you tell us a little bit about the company and its mission, where, you know, everything about the company, where did the idea come from and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, real quick. So Triple Nickel came from a circumstance. So January 1st, 2020, just want to put it out there. I was not thinking about starting a clothing company. We started Triple Nickel on November 11th, 2020. So when the pandemic hit in March and everything closed down, all of our locations, 90% of them, not an exaggeration, closed down. So I was stuck at home. I couldn't work because my kids were not in school. So that gave me the opportunity to see what was going on in the community as a whole. So it gave me a chance to plug back in. So, and because I'm a veteran, I'm getting targeted on social media, you know, all of the different companies that are veteran owned. So, and what I saw a lot of in that time was this propagation of, you know, if you're a veteran, you're like this hyper commando, and you're doing all these crazy things. And I saw that as absurd. Number one. Number two, with the killing of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, the division that was going on in the country with the election cycle, I saw a lot of messages of hate coming out of these veteran owned companies, which I found appalling as well. And three, I saw a lot of lack of diversity in a lot of the veteran-owned companies. You know, if I'm looking at going into the military, I want to support these made in the USA patriotic brands, I would think that if you're a veteran, you got to be this big white dude with tattoos and a huge beard. And again, I found that weird, you know, especially with my background. So at that point, I decided I wanted to do something different. And going back to the leadership, like if I didn't like something, then I needed to step in and do something. So the easiest thing for me to do was like, okay, let's create a clothing company. I don't know how to make clothing, but let's create a clothing company. That's the antithesis of all this. And let's sprinkle in some unity. Let's sprinkle in some music. We like hip hop, so let's do it with hip hop. And let's sprinkle in the communities that we come from and celebrate those instead of, I'm going to throw punch you in the face, or I'm going to take this bullet and I'm going to make it go inside you and I'm going to love it. So especially with, you know, with all these suicides that we have going on in our community, I didn't think that the messages that were propagated by these companies were really helpful to that. So Triple Nickel is a byproduct of what I saw in the middle of 2020. And that's really how the company came to be.
Yeah, I know from my experience serving in the Army, I was an infantryman. I deployed to Afghanistan. The people that we served with were from all different backgrounds. You know, what you're talking about, you know, the white bearded guy with tattoos and everything, like there were so many, it was such a diverse background of people from all walks of life.
Yeah.
People who came from affluent backgrounds,
yeah.
People who came from, inner city, areas, people who were white, people who were black, people who were Puerto Rican, people who were Asian and other, just all over the place. Like it was just such a huge mixture of people. I couldn't describe in like one sentence, what is your typical soldier or typical veteran? Because there'd be so many different adjectives going into this to describe somebody and so many different backgrounds and everything. Like you couldn't do it and use like proper English grammar. Like you couldn't do it. And so, yeah, when I heard about this, I was thinking to myself, like, what is it that you're trying to achieve with this? But then I started looking around at, some of the other brands that are out there, and I don't want to call out anybody and name names or anything like that. But there is a lot that is out there that isn't necessarily representative of the military. And like you said, if your son was looking to join the military, would he look at that like, oh, well, maybe this job isn't for me? I don't know. Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. But it certainly is another way to think about this. So it's definitely a cool idea, and how you wrapped it around the not only the veteran culture, but your communities, your interests, the music and things like that. I think that all wraps everything nicely together. Ruben, a lot of veterans have trouble in their transition out of the military. We talked a little bit about your transition earlier in this episode, but as an entrepreneur, what advice do you have for the veterans who might be listening to this episode who are interested in starting their own business, but maybe just don't know where to start?
Yeah, there are so many different ways. And I think every business owner is going to have a different set of pieces of advice. Mine would be, I'm going to break it down into a couple areas. Number one is find a mentor or mentors. We talked a little bit about it at the top of the episode. Just like you would if you were in the military, you're going to find that seasoned NCO, that officer who's going to put you under his wing and kind of guide you through your job, your career, your branch, your MOS. You need to find a mentor, and it doesn't have to be specifically in that field that you want to set up a business in, but somebody who's cut their teeth. So, and what is a good mentor? Very briefly, is somebody who has experience. It's not somebody who's got maybe a day ahead of you in doing a business. It's like the people who reach out to you that are social media experts, but maybe have 2 followers. You want somebody who has solid experience in the field that you're heading. And number two is you need to educate yourself. We all come out with this gift of the GI Bill. And if you don't know anything about business, I encourage you to use the GI Bill. Either go back to school. If you got a bachelor's, look into a master's. If the master's isn't for you, then look at programs, maybe take an accounting course, maybe take a business course. Utilize that GI Bill to your benefit because it is so golden. The last thing I would say is continuing that education with download Audible. I love Audible and read. You know, starting a clothing company, I would have loved nothing more than to have Damon Johns as my mentor or, I really like, Dapper Dan. He now works for Louis Vuitton, or to talk to Pharrell, you know, all these guys in the fashion world just to get there, but I don't know them. You know, I spent all my time in the military growing up fighting wars. So I don't know anybody. My network like sucks when it comes to clothing. So the next best thing is I download their books and I listen. I take notes and use those as lessons learned. So if you can do those three things, you're going to be light years ahead of somebody who doesn't do those three things. So that would be my
recommendation. Yeah, and I think that kind of touches on something that we mentioned earlier in this episode, which is to, like when you're in the military, you were relying on some of the NCOs to help guide you through, you know, your career. And it's very similar. If you can find that mentor in business to help guide you through some of the struggles that you're going to go through, inevitably, everybody who starts a business, it's not smooth sailing from day one. It's rarely smooth sailing ever. You end up having all sorts of things that come up. And I think having somebody who can help you navigate through some of that stuff is super important. And, building that relationship with that individual or individuals, because there may be more than one person who's helping you out. Building that relationship with those people is just going to help guide you in that right direction. So that way, when you do stumble, you're not stumbling alone. You have somebody who you can count on.
Absolutely.
Right? I think that's super critical.
Absolutely. It's key, man. And just so people understand like how strongly I feel about this, I didn't build Triple Nickel alone. It's by design. If you look at my co-founders, they're all NCOs retired, you know, so Chris McPhee, Rod Graham, Cortez Riggs, all those guys are retired E8s. You know, Rod Graham, he and I served together in 7th Group. He was actually my team sergeant when I was an 18th commander. You know, Chris McPhee, our chief marketing officer, he's also a retired 18th Zulu. And Cortez Riggs, he retired recruiting first sergeant. So utilizing, I am not like this great leader. I just listen to the good NCOs, the good mentors, and they help just light my path. And that's what these guys have helped me do in creating the business where we're at.
You know, I think you said you're not this, you know, great leader or whatever, but I think that's what makes a great leader is someone who's willing to listen to other people and collect feedback and utilize the resources that are available to them so that, again, like you're just one person. You can only do so many things on your own. You only have so many ideas, but start bringing in other people and other ideas. You mix that all into this business and it's going to grow. It's going to get better. Now, obviously, there's going to be times when people have bad ideas or bad, they're just a bad seed. But having worked with these people in the military, you know these people. You know who they are. You know their work ethic. You know the types of things that they can bring to the table. And so when you're talking to them, you know what you're getting. And I think that's maybe an unintended thing that you mentioned here. But I think having the people that you served with in the military, if you can bring them into your business, that might be great too, because you already know how you work together. Right?
Yes. And that's the part that I love, you know, being able to have those guys, we speak the same language, kind of like with, the vending company. I just recently sold the vending company because Triple Nickel is becoming so, it's growing so rapidly. I found it challenging to do both. So reluctantly, I sold it. But again, by design, the first guys I hired when I started the vending company were teammates from my time in SF. I just feel comfortable being able to rely on those guys that have the same energy that I bring to the right. table. You know, we like to say, you know, we're constantly running about a 5 mile pace, 5 minute per mile pace, you know, for the runners that are out there. It's just an analogy. I can't run 5 minute miles anymore, but
neither can I.
Theoretically, at the way that we operate, that at the rate that I make decisions, that I'm able to network with people and make rapid fire decisions and strategy, it's at a very fast rate, and I need the people of the same caliber that can keep up. And it's really cool to have those guys as partners.
And, you know, one of the things that I've discovered just through doing this podcast and talking to other veterans is one of the things that people have the most trouble with getting out of the military is finding a job that not only a job that they like and that they're interested in and will further their career, but finding a job that has coworkers that they can get along with. It's just dealing with the people mm-hmm. that maybe never served in the military, rub them the wrong way.
Yeah.
They don't like that. So having a business like that, where now you're working with the other guys that you served with, I think that's a cool way to kind of circumvent some of that problem and kind of ease your way back into that civilian life. I don't know, that might be a good way.
But you know what, though, Scott? Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, and then for anybody out there listening, it does not solve that problem.
Okay.
Because if you create a business, the news flashes, you still are going to have
That's
customers.
True.
And those customers may not be in the military. And those customers are your boss because they're paying
you. That is
you.
True.
So you're going to deal with, you have, no matter what you do, unless you have this remote job where you don't have to deal with anybody, but I think those are rare. You're going to have to learn how to work with people and have to find a good outlet for you to just relieve that stress of not dealing with people of the caliber you're used to. Because, you know, Triple Nickel, man, we're dealing with that 24/7. Same thing when I was in vending. I was dealing with, you know, an 8-year-old kid who has his money stuck in my vending machine is my boss. And you have to, you know, I had a lot of high schools here in San Antonio. The funniest ones were I go into a high school and the high schoolers looking at me like, man, you just wasted your life, bro. You just pushing a dolly, like looking down at me, you know, and they're telling me this like, yo, are you stupid, man? Why are you pushing a dolly? And in my mind, I'm like, he's my boss.
Yeah.
You know, if I say something bad to this kid, he can lose his contract. So it's understanding people, and the quicker you can do that, I think the more successful you'll be able to be.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good perspective. I hadn't thought about it the way that you put it there. But yeah, you're right. The old saying that the customer is always right. I mean, they may not actually technically be always right, but they're your boss, right? They're the ones who are paying the bills. They're the ones who keep the lights on and keep the money coming into the company. And without them, you don't have a business. So yeah, you're right. I like how you put that there. And, you know, you talked a little bit about, networking before too, and building those relationships. And I think that's another important piece of this. Have you found any other resources that have been helpful to you in starting and growing the business with regards to maybe networking or things like that? I know you talked about, you know, getting in touch with other people, but were there any resources that you utilized, or were you just out there pounding the pavement trying to find these people to do business with?
That's a good question. And I say all the above. You got to do everything. You almost have to be an octopus, but breaking it down to specifics, number one is LinkedIn. I was never a big user of LinkedIn, And I think everything boils down to where you want to be. And I think it goes down to, if you want to start a business, you have to be extremely brutally honest with yourself at what level you want to operate at. You want to be at the local level. You want to be at the state level. You want to be at the national level. You want to be international. If you want to operate at a local level, then start hitting the Chamber of Commerce and getting to know people within your city. And that worked well for me as a vending guy. I didn't need to worry about national stuff. But to start a clothing company and you want to make a national or international impact, oh my God. One of my teammates was like, bro, you got to get on LinkedIn and you need to start hitting people up and making yourself accessible. And that's something I never had to do as a local business guy. So if you've never heard of Ruben Ayala before Triple Nickel, it's by design. I didn't have to. And I think that that's really where, if you want to start a business, you have to understand at what level you want to operate. And that'll tell you really where you need to focus your efforts at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think it's good advice too, because yeah, each business is going to be a little bit different in terms of, you know, what your market is. You know, do you want that local level? Do you want the national or international level? That, you know, statewide even, you know, there's a lot of different elements there, and it really is going to help focus where you need to spend your time on. Ruben, thanks for not only your service, really do appreciate your service, but also everything that you've shared with us today. I think this information is going to be especially useful for those veterans who are maybe just getting out of the military or maybe wanted to start a business. They're just not sure where to start. A lot of stuff that we talked about today is really good stuff. Can you tell the audience though a little bit more about where they can go to find out more about Triple Nickel, check out some of the products that you have and the other work that you guys are doing there?
Absolutely. Always love to do it. So first thing I want everybody to write down is triplenickel.com. That's triple NIKEL. If you want me to do it phonetically, November, India, Kilo, Echo, Lima.com. You go to the website. There you'll be able to look at our latest collections. You can read our blog posts, which we upload once a week, and stay in touch with everything that we got going on and sign up for our newsletter. Secondly, social media. All of our handles are triple_nickel. So you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on TikTok, Twitter. We do it all. We try to, at least, you know, we're a bunch of old guys trying to be hip, right? So if that is not enough, you can go to Kohl's. We're in 600 stores nationwide. Through Kohl's, you can go to Kohl's.com, KOHLS.com. Type in Triple Nickel. We'll be there. Later this year, we're going to be in AFES.
Oh, awesome.
So newsflash. Oh, hell yeah, man. It's a homecoming. That's what I told AFES. Y'all get ready. This is a homecoming. So yeah, man, we're on this, like I'm on this warpath, bro, to world domination. I'm so stoked to get Triple Nickel everywhere. Our 2023 to 2025 strategy statement is to become the most widely distributed veteran owned brand in America. So that's the state of Triple Nickel today.
Yeah, that's great. And expanding into the physical retail stores, Kohl's and AFES eventually, you know, later on this year. I think that's incredible. That just shows the growth of the company, getting it out there into these different places, I think is super important for any business to have those types of connections. Yeah, sure. You can do everything online, but it will also limit your reach. You're going to not get those people who are in the store looking for, you know, those purchases. They're going to end up buying some other brand because there's going to be something else filling that shelf space, in those stores. So yeah, having that there, I think is really important. And for the listeners, the viewers, we're going to have the links that Ruben mentioned in the show notes, for this episode. So you can grab them there. Ruben, thank you again for taking the time to join us and sharing your background, your knowledge, your resources that you've put together over the last few years. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. It was great to meet you, Scott, and spend some time with you today.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.